I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Hey, this is Adam Beauchesne, and you are listening to the Don't Go Out There Horror Podcast.
We made you! We made you! Oh, we made you! We made you!
They can't! We made them! We made them!
Hey! In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers and vampires all exist. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network, so there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys, jumping to the film review. This week, we're going to be closing out our free month with Brother Dustin's pick. Dustin, would you like to go ahead and announce your pick for us?
Hell yeah, man. I've been looking forward to picking this movie for so long. This is a movie that I loved when I was a kid. Because, like, I don't really have a reason to love it as a kid because I didn't know. Like, I saw it at such a young age that I didn't understand what's going on in a lot of movies. I think it was the Green Goblin truck. I was fascinated by it and I loved it because that's how young I was. I was like 5. I hadn't seen this movie in over probably 25 years. I'm talking about 1986 as a Maximum Overdrive. Watched this movie, like I said, my dad, it was on TV one day and I watched it and I loved it. Then he didn't like it. I remember that. And anytime it was on TV, I'd want to watch it. But I just remember him like, oh, God, no, I don't want to watch that again. And so I admit it's not a good movie, but damn it, is it entertaining. I had a ton of fun rewatching this movie 25 years later.
All right, I'll go next. Dustin, I love you, but I did not like the movie. It was funny in some spots, but I just thought the premise was stupid, and it just, I don't know, the whole mood and tone of the movie just threw me off. There's supposed to be some sad scenes, but you got fucking AC/DC playing all the time. So I don't know how to even feel throughout the movie. They should have just played Highway to Hell the whole time. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan, but I did enjoy listening to AC/DC. Go ahead, Brian.
That's because you've never done cocaine, brother.
That's true.
And, okay, so I'd never seen this movie. And listen, like you said, it's not good in the general sense that we use the term. And look, I mean, it's, yeah, it's stupid. It makes no goddamn sense. But I don't think it had to. Like, in the same way that Killer Clowns didn't have to. It didn't take itself too seriously. I think it's fun. It's funny as shit. I had a fantastic time. Like, which honestly shocked me. And this is nothing like I expected. And I mean, you mentioned it. The AC/DC soundtrack is probably 70% of what made this movie so enjoyable for me. Like, it almost didn't matter what was on the screen some of that time. This movie is the epitome of the music making it for me. Now, it does drag a touch in the middle. You know, it's not going to get a 10 for me or anything, but I had a great time watching this and have not been this pleasantly surprised since, you know, I don't know, The Walking Dead, but maybe movie-wise, Talk to Me, I guess, or even Werewolf by Night. But regardless, if this is ever on a platform where it's not edited, I will watch it because my favorite parts of this are stuff that wouldn't be on normal network TV, so which isn't even really a thing anymore anyway, but...
Yeah. Okay. So when this movie was picked, I felt personally attacked. I think that was on purpose. You son of a bitch. You mentioned Highway to Hell playing the whole time. That's what I felt like I was on watching this fucking movie. No, I'm slightly kidding. All right. So it has some funny parts, like you mentioned. It does. I can't lie. There's a few moments that pop me, and I love AC/DC. I think even though they're overplayed, they're maybe one of the most underrated bands of all time. Because people think all their shit sounds the same, but that doesn't make it bad. It just makes it good. Like, I don't understand what the problem is there. I'm also going to strike you down for comparing this to Killer Clowns, because Killer Clowns is much better than this. Anyway, on to this movie. There's some good spots, man, but it just drags for me because of the premise. The haunted cars being done by aliens doesn't do anything for me. Trucks, whatever. The premise just isn't fun for me. Like, I don't have any fun with it. There's some funny parts, but it just drags on for me, man. I tried. I really did. Part of me really wanted to come into this review and just be like, you know what? I was wrong. Dustin was right. I'm a fucking idiot. But I can't go that far because about the last 30 minutes of the movie, I really wanted it to get over. So... yeah, I mean, I'm excited to talk about it, though, because I'm sure it's going to be a fun episode. You know, and I hate that you personally attacked me with this, Dustin, because I feel like we've been agreeing on movies a lot lately, man. Like, that is, we haven't had a good disagreement on a movie in a while, man.
I didn't attack you. I bought this movie on Steelbook, or the Steelbook version of this movie when it came out last year. I pre-ordered that shit. And so I've been wanting to pick this for a long time.
Killer Clowns and this is the same shit. It's just stupid shit that's just funny as hell. Like, and it makes a lot of fun. Yeah. It's the same thing.
No doubt. It just sometimes it hits for me and sometimes it doesn't. Also, I have a great feeling in the pit of my stomach. If I remember Christine correctly, I'm going to like this movie more. All right. Anyway, go ahead.
This movie's hilarious. So I'm doing the scene by scene tonight. You guys have any more opening thoughts before I jump into it? All right, let's do it. Lord, bear me strength. The movie opens with a look at the Earth from outer space, or so they'd have you believe. Nice try, but the Earth is flat. Anyway, we get some text on screen that says that on June 19th, 1987, at 9:47 a.m., the Earth passed into a tail of a rogue comet and will remain in the tail for the next 8 days, 5 hours, 29 minutes, and 23 seconds. Okay. Cut to the hometown of basketball's GOAT, Michael Jordan, Wilmington, North Carolina. The local bank's marquee sign says, "Fuck you," over and over. And when Stephen King himself tries to get money from the ATM, the screen calls him an asshole. QACDC's Who Made Who. We get a fire soundtrack to accompany our title card and opening credits that they're overlaying on the scenes of traffic. We see some drawbridge operators playing boogers or picking boogers and playing cards. And then we see buttons pressing themselves and levers turning without human assistance. The bridge raises itself, sending cars sliding and people into the water below. Cars, people, and even watermelons start flying everywhere in a comically over-the-top fashion. The bridge operators are baffled and deliver an Oscar-worthy acting performance. And then we see the most iconic part of the movie, a black 53-foot dry van that says Happy Toys on the side, but most notably, the tractor that's pulling it with a large green goblin on the front. The truck pulls up at a truck stop where two mechanics, Duncan and Joe, are shooting the shit about Duncan's son's Little League career outside front or outside shop. The driver, Handy, gets out and heads inside for a coffee. Diesel was $1.08 a gallon. Wow. Inside, Gordon Bombay is cooking on a flat top grill when Commissioner Gordon calls him into his office. Then Gus Fring is in the game room when they start going haywire, to which he replies, "Ya mama." Okay. The cigarette machine and change machine start emptying themselves, so he lines his pockets. Back outside, the fuel pump shut off before the truck is full, so Duncan, who was filling up the truck, does the logical thing. He looks into the pump nozzle and gets a money shot for his trouble. I know eyes full of diesel fuel had to burn like a bitch. Back inside in the office, Commissioner Gordon is trying to get Gordon Bombay. Okay, I'll use their real names in the movie. Hendershot is trying to get Bill to work on an hour free each day. And we find out that Bill is on parole and he's leveraged into doing it. And we find out that several of the employees are also on parole, apparently. Back in the cooking station, an electric knife turns itself on and attacks Wanda June, severely wounding her arm. So Bill does the only logical thing. He smashes it with a fucking hammer. Fully stocked up on cigs and pocket change, Giancarlo Esposito's character starts to exit the arcade, but one of the games mesmerizes him. And when he touches it, he's electrocuted. Bill investigates it and finds Giancarlo knocked out against the wall with electricity buzzing through his body. That's the open. What you guys think?
All right, so I have a lot on this I've seen, so bear with me. But like I said, the open of this movie, hell, the first half of this movie is amazing. I absolutely love it. The opening, first of all, with that bank marquee reading, fuck you. I kind of looked at it the first time like, what the fuck is this? Like, did that really say that? But then when King has his cameo at the ATM and it tells him he's an asshole. But most of all, when King yells back to his wife that this machine's called me an asshole. And then it like goes into that AC/DC soundtrack before the title card. To tell you, I started crying laughing. Like, this movie immediately hooked me. Like, I knew right off the bat what type of movie this was and what it was going to be, because the 80s was full of this type of movie. Toxic Avenger, Adventures in Babysitting, Caddyshack, Killer Clowns, like I said before. And by God, I fucking love this type of movie. I'm immediately in at this point. But speaking of King, look, I don't know what to think of King. I pretty much ignore him on social media. But to know that most of his shit he's done on some sort of coke or drug bender, on top of the preteen sex shit in the It book, like, I don't know, part of me is like he's a genius and part of me is like, what the fuck, you know? And like was mentioned in the open, this was the only one of his adaptions that he directed. And even then, it's been long rumored that George Romero actually ghost directed this because King was, once again, on a coke bender. And I know King himself has stated that he doesn't like how this movie turned out, but there's a whole bunch of websites out there that break down these cuts and edits throughout and how they're very Romero-esque. So I don't know. All I know is King's pretentious ass has never admitted to that. Only thing he's admitted to is being, quote, coked out of my mind during production and often didn't know what I was even doing. Maybe he will try directing sober one day. That was the quote. Crazy. Oh, well, this movie's fun as hell, starting with this bridge scene, which, I mean, it's not Final Destination 5 bridge scene, but come on. Like, there's a ton during this where I was like, wow, they did that with practical effects? Like, stuff that would be a no-brainer CG nowadays. And I'm dying laughing, as I will a ton during this movie, at, like, how fucking slow shit is moving and how goddamn dumb some of these people are. Like, you're just like, yep, deserve that. Yep, your fault, deserve that. Like, the bridge is barely lifting up, like very slowly. And then you get the exchange between the bridge operator and his coworker where he's calling him a goddamn idiot. Super smoking the bandit vibes there, fucking chef's kiss. And say what you want about the effects, you know, as these arcade games shot lightning at who, like you mentioned, Dustin, a young Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. But say what you want about the lightning effects. But I believe we just reviewed a movie made in 2023. And Late Night with the Devil with the same effects. One of my favorite opening sets of scenes in a long time, full of fucking stupid ass people like Duncan shooting herself in the eyes with diesel and Ellen McDelf, who looked a ton like Lene Quigley to me, by the way. That ridiculous electric knife. Great shit, Bubba.
Hell yeah, brother.
You just didn't get the effects in Late Night with the Devil. You just didn't get it, Brian. Okay. All right. By the way, Wilmington is such a random place to have this movie take place. Or just really super random. This machine just called me an asshole with something I am stealing every time my phone fucks up. But hey, it's fucking thing. I am stealing that line. Big plus for using AC/DC like we talked about. This bridge opening is, it's fucking hokey. It's funny. Like, there's some good charm to it. I'm not going to lie. It's so slow. And are watermelons supposed to be scary? Because they're not. It's fucking hilarious. And I like some of the dialogue here. It's very 80s. Now, look, I don't have a lot of 80s nostalgia personally, but there's a few movies. And I know that me and Dustin agree in lockstep here. Ernest Goes to Camp is what I think of when I see a movie from this time period. And that's literally the kind of dumb characters this movie has too. So I agree. And I will say the Green Goblin truck itself looks really cool. Now I think later it's played for haha. And I don't know. It didn't work for me then, but it is a cool look for sure. Fucking Gordon Bombay being in this movie is still so fucking random to me. Cause I, as a kid, 90s, I grew up only knowing him as Gordon Bombay. So Emilio Estevez here, just really random to me. Those non-digital gas numbers, you know, the manual ones that actually turn, that did take me back though, because I had a few of those growing up as well. gas coming out and hitting this man in the face was fucking hilarious. I laughed my ass off at it. You know, almost every machine, you know, once you know why, makes a lot more sense. But like every machine coming to life, just, I don't know, man. And this fucking knife thing, this woman is a moron, okay? And she, I have a pretty big section on her later in the film where I kind of lay into her. No, you know, no harm, no foul. She's just, oh, come on. We agreed not to do that. We agreed not to do that. Come on, man. Come on. I will say, last thing, the scene in the game room is really fun. I actually think the lightning effects are fun. There's some 80s cheese, as we like to call it there, some camp that I think actually plays really well. So a little bit of a mixed bag for me here.
All right. Like you all mentioned, the fuck you on the bank message board and the ATM calling Stephen King an asshole. I did think that was hilarious. And like both of y'all mentioned, AC/DC, what a great way to kick off a movie. But I don't know. Y'all didn't mention anything, but I was disgusted by the guy flicking his boogers all over his card, buddy. Like, what the hell is wrong with that guy? Like, I thought that was disgusting. A random fact about myself, drawbridges are horrifying to think about in real life. The guy falling off the motorcycle and into the river below, it should have been a horrifying scene, but instead, I was crying laughing at it. It was funny to me. The goblin-looking truck, I thought it looked badass, but a nitpick, I refuse to believe it has no bug stains on it. Are you fucking kidding me? In North Carolina, there's bugs everywhere. You get out of here.
Now they sprayed it with Pam.
Okay. I got you. I guess I'm in the minority here, but what the fuck is this fuel guy doing to this pump, and what is this loud score? I'm not sure which is worse. Like, this guy's an idiot. Like, he's looking right into it. He's like eye examining. Like, this guy's a fucking idiot. I got a chuckle out of the person's name on the time card being Gene Poole. I guess I might have been the only one who noticed that, but I thought it was funny. And I'll just say that this was just an interesting open to me. I'll just leave it at that. Go ahead, Dustin.
We're off to a hell of a start here. We cut to a baseball field where some little leaguers are living the dream, playing baseball in jeans. Okay. A coach tries to get a soda from a vending machine, and a soda can fires from the dispenser and nails him in the nuts. When I tell you, I horse laughed. A couple more cans hit him at a rapid speed before cans start flying out at a crazy pace, chasing off some and taking out a few others of the baseball team. I laughed so hard here, I had to pause it. That shit was so funny. Stephen King was high as a giraffe pussy making this movie. One kid checks on his coach and uses his catcher's mask to shield from the fury of the cans. And then a rogue steamroller busts through the outfield fence and flattens a kid who crashed his bike. Hell yeah, man. This is just awesome. The fun is broken up when we cut to a Bible salesman driving with a hitchhiker in the passenger seat. The radio tells us that there's some weird shit going on and advises us to get off the main highway. She yanks his steering wheel and whips the car into the parking lot of the truck stop / restaurant we're at and channels her inner Bart Simpson telling the guy to eat her shorts. That's a great touch considering the fact that the voice of Lisa Simpson is also in this movie. While he scolds her, the Green Goblin truck turns itself on and starts revving the engine. It charges at two of the travelers and charges at the two travelers and she pulls him out of the way. The people inside look on and we see the keys weren't even in the ignition of the truck. Speaking of Lisa Simpson, a couple of honeymooners are driving down the road, and we see the headlights of cars parked along the road flashing. They pull into a gas station where the attendant is laid out and bloodied and dead. An old tow truck starts driving, and the groom waves it down. The truck almost runs him over, but he jumps out of the way. When the truck starts back up, the newlyweds speed off. Bill checks out the inside of the Green Goblin truck, and then Brett flirts with him, and he tells her there's no one in it. That's the next set of scenes. What'd you guys think?
So sneak behind the curtain. When we got this scene breakdown from Dustin here, he wrote, at Brian's home away from home. And the first time I read this, I was like, what the fuck is this? Some sort of like mansion he's giving me shit about or something. But no, the baseball field at a youth baseball game. And by God, there's never been truer words uttered, my friend. And yeah, this baseball scene may be my favorite scene in the movie. We get a hilariously bad cut where it clearly shows the shortstop throwing to third base, but then it cuts to a play at the plate. Okay. And that's funny you said this because I wrote, just chalk that one up to a cocaine director, Bubba. But where are all the fans, by the way? Like, there's zero parents at all, either team. But this fucking coach, Bob Gunner of Pumpkinhead fame, by the way, don't worry, boys, I got the sodas. Okay, ridiculous, yes. But that leads to a fucking awesome scene with this Coke machine throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs out, splitting testicles, and literally cracking the skull with one of them. That was so fucking awesome. Then followed by more hilariousness as none of the kids can get the fuck left or right and just take hilarious straight lines running backwards before getting laid out by the flying soda cans. And I'm like, oh my God, this soda is my favorite kill, until literally 2 seconds later, a kid gets mowed over by a goddamn steamroller simply because he went tits up out of a gigantic field right in front of the steamroller. And this is what I mean, man. Vehicles like the steamroller that are out in the open with the driver, super impressive how they had them running and the shots they had on them. Like, where nowadays, it would just be easily someone driving it with a green bodysuit on. Very impressive practical mastery there. Now, I know, and just a little bit ago, and the end of the last review, Dustin mentioned Yeardley Smith playing Connie here, being Lisa Simpson before her role in The Simpsons. God damn, that's one annoying human being in this character. But again, like, a ton of movies in the 80s had this exact same character in it. Let me tell you, the first time I ever saw her in a movie, City Slickers. My parents loved that fucking movie back in the day.
That's a good one. That, I like that one.
That and Pretty Woman were always on at the house. Richard Gere, shout out to him. Anyway, sidebar. Love John Short, though, period. Kept thinking and thinking, like, where the hell do I know him from? Forget Apollo 13. Eh, Christmas with the Cranks. Oh, no. It's 2000s. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That's where I know that Joker from. Love that guy. Love that movie, Bubba. Last thing, and I'll shut up. We're introduced to Laura Harrington as Brett here. Like, I know she's got that look like a lot did throughout, you know, movies in the 80s. But besides What's Eating Gilbert Grape and The Devil's Advocate, she didn't really do much at all after this. So I'd love to have her on the show. Check your DMs.
Yeah, so if you look hard enough, you said there's no one in the stands, but if you just squint just the right way, you can see Brian actually in the stands there, because that's how often he's at the fucking ball field.
That's about right. Yeah, probably right. Was there.
This soda machine scene is fucking hilarious. I will give this one its flowers. I thought it was fucking great. You know, maybe if it were like 1996, it would have been the pitching machine, but that would have been just as funny. But the soda machine was great, and the effects on the forehead I thought looked pretty good. It was a good one. The stash of this man driving the car, impeccable stash. I want that thickness in my stash, and instead I get this Mario looking fucking thing that I have, which is unfortunate. But I'd rather have this guy's stash for sure. Now, the line, if you touch me that way again, you'll be wiping your ass with a hook next time you take a dump. That's a great fucking line. Love that one. I'm going to steal that one. No one's ever really touching my leg, but I'm still going to steal it for something else. 1986, Laura Harrington, call me sometime. That's, I only got one in this movie, everybody, so you're good there. Yeah, so you mentioned Miss Lisa Simpson here. Bad acting, in my opinion. Like, she's good in some other stuff, but I know she's supposed to be annoying. And I guess I can give her props for being so fucking annoying. Later in the movie, again, she's one of two characters that just really pissed me off and irked my nerves. Like, she is so goddamn annoying. But again, there's some parts here where the movie is already kind of starting to drag for me a little bit. I think Brother Nico may be with me, like when the truck's kind of turning on by itself, and like I'm just like, huh, we got to get to some more funny shit, because to me, the only bright spots are the funny spots. And I'm not trying to take the movie too seriously. It just kind of wanted to progress more because I'm not scared. I'm not really interested in the actual alien situation here. Last thing, I would also flirt with Brett no matter what was going on, okay? Whether it was the apocalypse, alien invasion, whatever. I'm spitting game. I'm talking my shit. Go ahead, Nico.
I'd flirt with Bill.
Whoa. Hey, oh. Before you go, Nico, Mike, you said if this was the 90s, maybe they had a pitching machine. Brother, I just want to let you know, pitching machines were invented in 1897. So they had them in the 80s. Yeah,
I know, man. But, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Well, then they missed an opportunity. It's what they did.
I don't know, man. Coke cans are so much funnier.
Hitting them in the boys was fucking hilarious, man. That was just so funny.
Man, that shit, it was funny, but like whenever they cut away from it, you see like 500 Coke cans in the damn yards. Like that vending machine don't have that many damn Cokes in it. Jesus Christ. But anywho, I'm not sure what's funnier, the coach getting hit with the soda cans from the vending machine or the kid randomly yelling, "What the hell?" I thought the "what the hell" was so funny. This coach has a giant wound crater in his head, and of course the dumbass kid asks, "Coach, you okay?" Fucking kids, man. Then this kid gets run over by the steamroller. He had zero will to live. How pathetic of this young man. He pissed me off, too. This lady better relax telling the salesman to eat my shorts, because I definitely think this guy will eat your shorts, lady. Handy, the truck driver. He doesn't show anywhere near the concern he should, seeing his big rig driving away on its own. But, you know, this movie's not taking itself seriously, so maybe I'm just being critical. Circle K vibes from Kurt wanting to watch his girl use the ladies' room. The fuck's wrong with the people in this movie? Connie kind of annoys me with her yelling, but I respect her will to live and getting the hell out of Dodge when shit hits the fan. And my man Bill is just oozing riz flirting with Brett. And woo, $1.08 fuel. I need that again. Go ahead, Dustin.
Yeah.
That was so fucking funny. Is this how you guys feel whenever I review an A24 film? Because that shit was... Nico was on fire right there, and I'm dying laughing at some of the shit he was saying.
Dude, that's the reason... That's the reason I volunteered to do the scene by scene on this. I told Nico, I was like, "No, I want to do this so you can get your full wrath on this movie, this shit," and it's lived up to it. All right. Next, we cut back to our surviving little leaguer who's riding his bike down the road as sprinkler systems turn on in the background, and then we see people dead all over the neighborhood. Oh, and a dog. We see a dead dog with a toy cop car in his mouth. Can't make this shit up. As he's cruising on his Huffy, an ice cream truck passes through the neighborhood. The kid hides behind some bushes as it passes, and when the kid thinks he's safe, a push mower starts up and slowly pursues him. Back at the truck stop, Duncan, the mechanic who was bukkakied by diesel fuel, is telling Joe that he's got to get to his boy, and we see that his eyes are shot, but he's determined. Hendershot doesn't care about his eyes or his son, though.
Did he just say bukkakied by the fucking gas pump?
He did get the gas pump.
I mean, is that not what happened?
That's what happened.
Anyway, Hendershot doesn't care about his eyes or his son, though. He wants him to punch out before he leaves. Well, it doesn't matter in the end, because Duncan does his best Gage impression and gets plowed by a semi. Great blood splatter. The rest of the crew runs inside, and the runaway truck smashes into Bible salesman's brand new car. The man hurls hilarious insults at the truck, and then the Green Goblin truck starts up and starts chasing the man. In reverse. The truck rams the man, sending him through a fence into the creek. This movie fucks. After the carnage, the trucks park and turn off like nothing happened. Inside, Hendershot is trying to use the CB radio to call for help, but to no avail. The bravest person in the movie is Brett, who changes clothes in the restroom and is standing barefoot in the toilet area of a truck stop. Nasty. I needed a shower just watching that. When Handy and Joe bring Duncan's corpse inside, Hendershot is more concerned about dripping blood on his floors. What a dick. Outside, all the semis start up and lay on their horns before they all start driving and circling the place. This went on a comically long time. Back on the highway, our newlyweds continue their drive and almost wreck into a 1962 Mack B61 pulling a 48-foot flatbed, pulling it onto the road. The truck chases down the couple and damn near run them off the road a few times before the man uses some evasive driving to send the Mack truck off the road. exploding in the process for no apparent reason. LOL. They see a billboard for the truck stop and say they can call the cops from there. If they only knew that the truck stop was still being circled by all the trucks. When they pull up, they see the stalking big rigs, and the husband, Kurt, says he's going to make a run for it, and his annoying-ass wife, Connie, is scared. Just before he can get through the gap, a truck hits their car and flips him. Bill and Brett help them out of the car, and for no fucking reason whatsoever, Hendershot has a fucking rocket launcher all of a sudden and takes out one of the semis. God damn, this rules. He takes out another truck, and the whole crew heads back inside. What'd you guys think?
This movie and this review fucks. This is great so far. Another one of my favorite set of scenes with Deke riding his bike through the neighborhood with all the sprinklers going off around him as we pan through the carnage with the man on the radio talking about what's going on everywhere. Bravo to George Romero. Stephen King on some of these shots. That coupled with the soundtrack, absolutely perfect. There's a particular shot here where it shows Deke looking up at the half-naked woman hanging out of her window, dead. Then suddenly we're in the room with her, looking over her shoulder through the window with Deke riding away on his bike. Absolutely beautiful shot there. How did he hide from the ice cream truck, though? Weird. Great shot of no one driving that thing, too, by the way. But the lawnmower saw him, didn't it? Like, it went after him, so he didn't tell the ice cream truck? Come on. Major plot hole. This movie makes too much sense to go so far. So we can't be having plot holes like this. But we go into one of the funniest goddamn kills of the movie, and Duncan, bro, sees the truck, screams with like 20 yards left until it's even close to him. I'm crying. It's Austin Powers steamroller. And then the Bible salesman sees his truck getting hit and says, "Son of a bitch, get out of the way, my bitch." Oh, and then again, runs straight from the truck backing up instead of literally moving left or right and gets hit by the trailer. I'm dying at this point. And so these trucks should have always had guns or something because, I mean, let's be honest. This driving in a circle ain't stopping no damn body. Come on. There's Kim Kardashian-sized gap right there in between those trucks. Let's get that on the open right now. Some alien lasers or something. That and, you know, now we're shooting rocket launchers at a fucking gas station, by the way. And he fires it right at everyone running. Like, they had to dive out of the way before the missile hit them. And you know, before he hits the truck anyway, Bubba's lost his goddamn mind. So, up to this almost midpoint here, I'm all the way in. But after this set of scenes, it does start to lose me a little bit, starts taking itself a little too seriously, and does start dragging just a little bit.
Hold on. You cannot call me out for saying that he bukkake'd himself with diesel fuel and then say a Kim Kardashian-sized gap. What? And
brother, honestly,
the Tom Brady roast is fresh in my head still, so I'm sorry.
Fucking fantastic. Okay.
Funny story, when Jeff Teague was at Wake Forest, he almost got kicked out of school and arrested because he downloaded the Kim K sex tape, and it took like 15 hours to download on the school's Wi-Fi, and he almost got arrested for it.
Demon time.
Hey, yo. These baseball uniforms are cracking me the fuck up. Kids today would never know. And I know Brian knows these fancy ass fucking uniforms these kids have now. I had a t-shirt and some fucking shorts back in the day, bro. Like, this is hilarious to me. Also, this neighborhood is great that he's riding his bike through. Like, this is the neighborhood I want to live in, which makes it hilarious when these bodies are hanging out of the car, hanging out a window, lying in a bush. Like, I thought that was really nice. A really nice touch. So was the bloody mower. I thought that was pretty cool as well. This may be the creepiest ice cream jingle I've ever heard, which is something to say because we know, you know, how ice cream guys and minivans and all that stuff are perceived. This is a pretty creepy jingle. They do that well. Cool fucking kill with the semi. Like you said, screaming a football field away, just anticipating it like it, you know, like it's a wrestler taking a bump. I thought it was great. This Green Goblin truck, when it starts to move and its eyes light up, is like Freddy's Dead level of hokey to me. Like, I just can't get into it, man. I try, and I can have a little fun with it, I guess, but I don't know, man. I have a hard time with it. Out of the way, my bitch is fucking awesome. That is I fucking love that line, man. Again, this man cares about a dead guy dripping on his floor at a time like this. I mean, dude, whatever. I hate this fucking guy. There's a lot of characters in this movie that I just don't fucking like, man. Again, I'm sorry, and I know Dustin can relate, but with this new job I have, these trucks driving themselves around is fucking hilarious, considering they could probably do a better job than some of the people that actually do. Anyway, side note, Greensboro and Charlotte are great cities. I would move there as well. Here comes Connie again, and this is where she really turns the annoying knob all the way up to fucking 1,000. Like, she's asking a lot of questions. Like, dude, I don't know what's going on. Why the fuck do you think I know what's going on? Like, you're asking me. I don't know why this semi's gunning us down, dude. What the fuck? And she's screaming after the thing flips. Like, all right, wait, that's later. But she's screaming at him, like, telling him he can never drive again. Like, bro, he just saved your fucking life. Have some respect. Be thankful. Just, an awful character, man. And she plays it to perfection, so what do I know? Last thing, I thought the rocket launchers were a pretty cool touch. I will give them that. I think that was pretty cool.
Man, just looking at my notes after hearing y'all, I was like, man, I took this movie way too seriously, I think. Maybe I need to rewatch this, like, on an edible or something. But Deke riding his bike, seeing all these dead bodies and animals through the neighborhood should be, like, a horrifying scene. But we're getting this rock and roll score over and over, and it kills the whole mood of, like, the horror scene. But you can definitely tell King was on a coke bender making this. Duncan with some pretty bad acting in a serious moment. And I thought, you know, this boss, he can go to hell, man. Fuck you mean I'm fired if I leave to find my kid? Duncan, with no will to live, getting ran over. These folks aren't even worth Jigsaw's time. Like, they're just making it too easy for him. I'm crying, laughing at this guy spreading the gospel, then saying son of a bitch and calling the woman a bitch. That guy's funny. But another pathetic, what I thought was a death scene. How the fuck you get hit by a truck going in reverse like that? This is pathetic, guys. Brett is looking at Bill like she needs her clam split. My goodness. It's finally happening, head-ass lady. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on 1980s automobiles.
This is my favorite episode we've ever done.
That's a Lena the Plug nod right there, guys.
Who? Who?
All right, I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on 1980s automobiles, but this car should be able to dust this semi-truck, right? Just me, my line of thinking. I actually do appreciate the kiss shared by Kurt and Connie after the stressful pursuit and outburst of yelling from both of them. I thought that came across very authentic and genuine. However, I immediately regret complimenting Kurt, seeing this dumbass plane he's got trying to drive through these trucks driving in circles. And like you just said, Mike, I'm officially annoyed as hell with Connie never shutting the hell up. And also, how the fuck does a gas station owner have a rocket launcher? America.
Yeah.
Nico, you answered your own question.
Nico, the car would be able to dust the truck off the line, but that top-end speed of that semi when it's not pulling a trailer is pretty good. They got a lot of power. Anyway.
It was pulling a trailer, wasn't it?
I know. It's probably empty. Oh. It's probably empty. So it ain't loaded down. Anyway.
That's why it exploded without even touching anything.
Hey, yo.
Cocaine.
Come on, man. Hey, now come on. I was slandered feloniously, and now everyone else is doing it. Fuck y'all, man.
As the gang looks on at the trucks continue to circle and ram Kurt and Connie's car, Bill asks Brett about a straight razor she has. She says she's heading to Florida and a girl needs protection. Hell yeah, brother. Florida man's wild. She should have pulled it on the Bible salesman when he kept getting handsy in the car, if you ask me. She starts crying and says she's so scared. To quote The Ringer, I've seen better acting in pornos. The two continue their random love storyline, and we see the little leaguer who just arrived at the scene of the Mack truck that exploded. He barely has time to soak it all in, though, because a fucking pilotless airplane swoops in. I love the absurdity of this movie. In the restroom, Bill tries to get some info out of Joey about how much firepower Hendershot has in the basement, and man, is there anything more uncomfortably annoying than someone trying to have a conversation with you while you're trying to deuce drop? I mean, isn't anything sacred anymore? Bill and Brett go down into the basement, and it's essentially a whole-ass armory. The party is broken up by Hendershot, telling Bill to quit messing where he shouldn't, and he pulls an ultimate cock block by telling Brett about Bill's criminal history. Bill shoos him away, and Brett doesn't care. She likes a bad boy. The whole subplot is so unnecessary. Outside, the baseballer finally arrives to the truck stop, where the trucks are still circling. Later that night, Brett and Bill are cuddled up in bed. Logical. And they see the sky is lit up a crazy green hue. Also, is it not funny that Bill and Brett being in a love story, considering how much Bret Hart hates Bill Goldberg? Anyway, she leaps to the conclusion that all this mayhem is probably because of the comet. Careful. Don't want to tear an ACL jumping like that. The two plot their escape via sailboat to an island where no motorized vehicles are allowed, while the rest of the crew are just chilling in the diner area. The jukebox explodes, and Wanda June loses her fucking mind. She goes outside and puts on a dramatic performance before Bill saves her by pulling her back inside. All of the trucks start honking their horns, and the power goes out. Okay. The Bible salesman starts calling for help, and they try to come up with a plan to get him. Meanwhile, the baseball player starts crawling through a drain pipe as several more trucks start rolling in. Kurt and Bill make a run for it after some elite dialogue, which included Hendershot saying they're crazier than two rats in a plugged up shithouse, and Bill calling Hendershot a fuckhead. They crawl through the they crawl through shin high shit water, and before they get to the rescue target, the baseball kid reaches in first. Just when we think the guy's dead, he gives us a stupid jump scare and grabs the boy and threatens to kill him if he doesn't get him out of the ditch. Kurt and Bill arrive to save the boy, who I just learned his name is Deke in this set of scenes, from the guy, who's really dead this time. What? Okay. They just get Deke free and get back to the tunnel before a truck comes crashing in. What'd you guys think?
Not only a pilotless airplane, Dustin, but Rise of the Valkyrie is playing. Like, I was crying. What a song choice there. Jesus Christ, only someone on a cocaine bender. And this convo with Bill and Joey, while Joey is taking a shit, had me rolling as well. Like, Bill's trying to talk. All you hear is Joey's farting. And then Bill looks over the stall, and the goddamn subtitles say, "Squish, man." It said squish. God damn it, man. Holy shit, Emilio. Never let this girl Brett go. You can still grow up and end up coaching the Mighty Ducks. That's fine. But this beautiful woman just fucked you in a twin bed at a gas station with not Playboy pics hanging up. Nay, penthouse pics hanging up. I see you, Stephen King, you sick bastard. I mean, there was full frontal spreads going on that wall. But then This girl says, "You fuck like a hero," and also calls you a genius for the most basic ass idea. Keep this girl, man. You better wife her ass up now.
I'll say a queen, bro.
Wanda June freaking the fucked out saying, "We made you." That performance had me dying. But it was also at this point where I was like, why the fuck don't these trucks just bust through there and mow them down? Like, I'm glad they explained that later. It's a dumb explanation, but hey, Bart Simpson, at least you tried cake there. Another decent set of scenes here. I even thought this, so I wrote it down. So here's some insight into my thoughts. I said, don't look now, but I actually give a shit and invested in these guys running to the bathroom to the sewer. I don't know why. But also, how are they completely bone dry when they come back? I don't know. crazy as a couple of rats in a plugged up shit house. That's why. Wow. It had me cracking up. His response, like you said, "You, sir, are one of the biggest fuckheads I've ever met in my life." That was amazing.
Man, it's hypocritical of me in some ways because I mentioned how this is kind of the part of the movie, like you said, Brian, where it starts to take itself a little serious, maybe a little too serious. But then we got people fucking next to naked pictures, all the funny lines. I mean, there's you know, they're crawling through rivers of shit trying to come out clean on the other side. That's a Shawshank reference, Nico. So there's so much happening here. Oh, sorry, bro. I didn't know if you'd seen that one. All right. My bad, man. It's elite cinema, brother. It's elite cinema. What do you want me to do? All right. Anyway, I will say that Brett and Bill have good on-screen chemistry. They're two young, good-looking people. I totally get why they were cast here. I got to be honest. I did not know how to properly cut someone with a razor blade either, so I must be a complete fucking moron. And again, here is Buddy thinking that shit like being on parole will matter in this alien invasion world timeline. Like, who gives a fuck, bro? I will knock your ass out. And I would have if I were Bill, personally. again, even as a kid, I'm not crawling through the river of shit there, man. The sewer, the grate can stay on. I'm not doing that. It's just not going to happen. But I was so proud of Emilio Estevez here. That is some quick fucking. The world may be coming to an end thanks to the hands of the trucks. And now we're fucking in a twin bed at a gas station, and it's awesome. And I'm proud of him. And what a queen! Like you mentioned, hyping him up after the performance, calling him a fucking hero. Let's go, man. That is what we're looking for. Side note: I miss a good old school jukebox, man. Miss a good old school jukebox. I love seeing that. The world going tits up. Awesome line. I'm going to steal that line as well. I mentioned it earlier, but this waitress is a fucking idiot, man. Like, she's so dumb to me. And then this whole "we made you" thing, that's like, outside of being cut by that knife, it's like the only line she says the last 35 minutes of the movie is that. Just, "we made you, man." Shut the fuck up. Like the big fuckhead line, that was good. And then maybe the best AC/DC drop of the film here, for those about to rock, elite fucking song. I think it really does actually work for this scene, but I'm not Andy Dufresne in this shit. I'm not doing it. I would really have to want to have that will to live, and I'm not so sure that I do. I do feel bad for the character of Deke, though. Like you mentioned a little bit in your open there, Nico, where there's some like sad, serious stuff happening here that I'm having a really hard time taking serious. So I don't know. They're just that back and forth, pull and tug. Ayo. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm with you. And I literally start my first notes off with that. Brett expressing fear to Billy. And instead of it being a sincere moment, more rock and roll music playing. The tone of this movie is fucked up as a soup sandwich. And like Brian mentioned, now we get an adventurous score, Ride of the Valkyries, as his plane flies over deep. I wrote, this is supposed to be a horror movie, right? But then I got to remind myself, Stephen King was on that coke, so... Completely irrelevant to the film, but I hate when urinals have no privacy around them. Can I keep my little pecker to myself, please? Thank you. Hey, yo, Bill. My man goes on like from one extreme to the other in this next set of scenes. The fuck you peeping on another man boo-boo for? But then immediately he's seen beating some cheeks amongst technological warfare. My man is the Riz God. And the fuck is going on with Wanda June? Snapping on a possessed semi? More proof that Stephen King was coked out of his mind. I retract what I said about the kill earlier sucking. The salesman survives. This guy is at least funny, so I'm cool with him being alive. Bill and Kurt walk so Andy Dufresne could run, escaping this underground tunnel. See, Mike, I have seen that movie. Fuck off. And close call as this set of scenes ends with truck almost hitting deep.
So no one mentioned it, but Flight of the Valkyries, like I thought Daniel Bryan was making an entrance. I know, or Bryan Danielson. I know Mike gets that. But what I'm saying no one mentioned, why did that plane never, like, there was no payoff to that plane. The plane was never seen again. It didn't do anything. anyway.
Extra budget.
Man, you're telling me you watch AEW? Good thing there, Dustin. All right, buddy.
No, I was talking about Ring of Honor, Bryan Danielson. Anyway, before they head back to the truck stop, Deke asks Bill how his dad is, and, well, Bill just avoids answering. As they run back to the rest of the group, Bill stops to take out one of the trucks with a rocket launcher. Hell yeah. Inside, Hendershot shows unbelievable tact in breaking the news to Deke about his dad. Almost as sensitive as how the Blount County Sheriff's Department told me about my father's passing, but it's neither here nor there. Brett slaps Hendershot for it, but I mean, did she? She barely touched him. The next day, a bulldozer and a military vehicle with a machine gun mounted on it come rolling in, and suddenly the truck stops circling. The crew start waking up when one of them bursts through some swinging doors, shattering the windows in them, and exclaims, "What the fuck is going on here?" In the most over-the-top scene in the movie, which is saying a lot. The bulldozer pushes a car through the wall of the truck stop, which causes Hendershot to go grab the rocket launcher. Bad move, because after he fires a shot, the military vehicle with a machine gun unloads on the place. Multiple people are shot, and Wanda June has had enough. She grabs the rocket launcher and heads outside, but she's mowed down. Before she dies, though, she murders an innocent trailer of Miller beer. Didn't even shoot the tractor, just the trailer. Unbelievable. The military vehicle then starts honking the horn in Morse code, and Deke writes down the message. They want to be fed. They want fuel, or they'll kill everyone. Joe says they can't feed them. There's no power. And the lights come back on. LOL. Bill says he'll turn on the pumps and hopes that none of them left home without their American Express cards. LOL again. And the next set of scenes is the ending.
Yeah, this was probably my least favorite set of scenes here, to be honest. It started dragging a little bit to me. The whole bulldozer and little military scooter leader thing. I did appreciate the addition of a gun and definitely a fan of the kills, but I didn't need the trucks holding them hostage for fucking gas. And this whole subplot, we could have just had some more running them over and these idiots dying in different stupid ass ways and called it a day. I didn't really need this set of scenes, to be honest. And what the fuck is Wanda doing? Like, she runs back out there with the rocket launcher, which, by the way, had absolutely no rocket in it, but suddenly does, and pulls the same shit that she did earlier. Like, it was funny the first time, but I didn't need it this time. Should have just wasted her without the theatrics. Regardless, though, that soundtrack saves any scenes, even these, to me.
Oh, this is where the movie really, really just, it takes a nosedive for me. I mean, we get some more explosions. Those are fun, I guess. I will say, fuck this guy. This is not how you tell a child that their dad is dead. What a fucking asshole. And to me, Brett went easy on him. I would have at least kicked him right in the boys, man. And then a little bit later, we get Bubba dying here, man. 100% best part of the film. Fuck this guy. And then we get old Wanda June. The dumbest woman in the film, or the dumbest person in the film, who's basically just asking to get killed by these trucks. And boy, do they ever. I will say, this was a little bit ahead of its time without realizing it. All coked up Stephen King there, you know, with how aliens are invading, or we made you, we made you. Well, that's how people feel about AI stuff today. So a little bit ahead of its time, I guess. Old coked up director had a point to make, I suppose. But anyway, fuck you, Wanda June. And this Morse code thing's lame as shit to me, man. Like, I don't like it. It does nothing for me. All of a sudden, the power comes back on. Okay, how convenient. And the American Express joke, which you mentioned, Dustin, just not relevant in any way. I don't know. It's really started to lose me here, and I'm ready for it to wrap up. But shout out to AC/DC, though. Still fucking kick-ass soundtrack.
Hell yeah.
All right, so Deke asks, you know, Bill and Kurt if his dad is okay, and I immediately go into my Cat Williams voice. Hell no, but thanks for asking. Hendershot continues being a dickhead, telling Deke his dad's dead with zero empathy or compassion. But I got to compliment Deke. I thought he's low-key the best actor in the film. Shout out to Holter Graham. Hendershot goes and gets his rocket launcher again after a bulldozer runs into his building. But I ask, why did you stop shooting at them in the first place if you still had more rockets? Fucking idiot. And holy shit, this machine gun is mowing folks down. Hendershot being the most deserving to die, but it was still an unsatisfactory death. I wish he would have got a little more. I liked old Wanda June, but she was an idiot. It's hard to feel bad the way she died, the way she did. Stay your ass inside. The hell's wrong with you? Circle K vibes. The aliens can take over machinery, but can't use a CB radio to voice their demands or pump their own gas. Give me a fucking break. Let's get this over with.
Also, I didn't have this in my notes, but you guys don't have a problem with the fact that every semi was able to be taken over by these aliens, the steamroller, the bulldozer, the airplane, the lawnmower, but the married couple's car and the Bible salesman car weren't. What the fuck was up with that?
Didn't have even no problem with that. Had no problem with that whatsoever.
Didn't even think about it, brother.
Let's go home. Brett goes after Bill and tells him it's a bad idea. He assures her it's necessary and heads outside to fuel up the convoy. Bill talks to the Green Goblin truck and likens the fuel to drugs. And then he and the others gassed them all up as Hell's Bells plays. Hell yeah. Some random guy that I don't think we'd seen before takes over pumping for Brett. And they get a little weirdly intimate before she says that she hopes the trucks choke on it. That was odd. When the pumps run dry, the trucks blast their horns like a battle cry, and one of them, who happens to be a fuel tanker, pulls over to let Bill fill the tanks. Bill is pooped, so Handy helps him walk inside. Brother's got soft hands. He's exhausted from just pumping fuel. Yeah, it's 100 degrees, but he was just standing there. Anyway, Brett nurses him inside, and when he's got his strength back, he tells the guy outside he has a plan. He puts a grenade on the military vehicle and yells, "Run!" The machine guns start firing, but the grenade goes off, ending the threat. It's night now, and the group make their great escape through a drain pipe as the semis and bulldozer begin crashing into the truck stop. We get a lot of carnage, but everyone is safe. Armed to the gills, they take off towards the marina, and the truck stop explodes. All right. They take a breather at a diner, and the drive-thru speaker starts saying, "Humans here, humans here, humans here." Deke extracts some revenge for his dad and shoots it. The ice cream truck from earlier makes a return, but it's short-lived. Kurt and Brett shoot it a few times with their machine guns, and it flips and blows up, defying all logic. When they make it to the marina, one of the group, Brad, stops to take a diamond ring off a dead lady and doesn't notice the Green Goblin truck stalking him from behind. He gets ran over, and then Bill shoots the Green Goblin truck with the rocket launcher. Adios, motherfucker. The group rejoices and then sets sail, and a text on screen lets us know that 2 days later, a large UFO was destroyed by laser cannons and a class 4 nuclear missiles. 6 days later, the Earth passed beyond the trail of the comet exactly as predicted, and everyone who made it this far survived. Roll credits.
And the ending was fine. Like, at the start of this was what I was talking about earlier, with it giving a reason why the trucks didn't bust through and implying that they knew it had a cellar and that they'd fall through. How'd they know that? And Bill slapping the gun like it's a face and dropping the grenade on it. That cracked me up. I was like, really? The whole time he could have just ran out there and used the gun for his own, just took it over. Damn it, Emilio. It's time to run the flying V and let's get out of here. Insert comment here about how cheap the diesel gas was back then. Nico already did that. But man, here it shows my guy having 17 gallons for 10 bucks at one point. Like, god damn. Whew. Anyway, the original script that ended had the Dixie Boy survivors deal with one last obstacle before escaping, a machine gun mounted Coast Guard boat. There was also going to be one last shot of the city and Wilmington being destroyed by the machines. I kind of would have liked to have ended on a shot of that gunner boat coming around the corner and the crew like showing like, oh shit, while they cut away, like leaving it a little bit ambiguous. I think that would have been better. But hey, still a fun movie. I bet it's even better on Cocaine Bubba.
Oh, this shit fucking dragged, brothers. This was not good. I did not care for this. Probably because I wasn't invested in the characters a ton. Again, though, using Hell's Bells was cool as shit here. I mean, I thought that was a pretty cool scene to watch all those trucks kind of come in off the road there. I thought it was fun. But, man, Emilio Estevez worked as hard as Nico did a couple weeks ago. Holy shit. He was worn the fuck out from pumping this gas. God damn. Also, I will say it is smart. If I was an alien, I'd probably take over a machine, too. I mean, why the fuck would they want to invade us? That's dumb. I would also be a machine. But again, the ending just runs too long for me. They're in a marina. They're you know, powering around. Like, I just don't like it. And, again, I'm not invested in this whole aliens invade the truck story. So, for me, it just fell flat, right? And they tried to explain a few things away from earlier in the film that I didn't love. So, yep, I don't know. I was kind of ready for it to be over. There's some fun things, but all in all, I think the ending was just a little long for me personally.
Mike, me and you got the same notes tonight, basically, because I started mine off with, hell yeah, Hell's Bells, it goes crazy right now. If you're going to have rock music throughout a movie, might as well be AC/DC. Bros, listeners. $58 gets you over 100 gallons. Lord, I have seen what you've done for others.
Right?
Bill says the word interstellar, and all I can think is I was watching Interstellar instead of this piece of shit movie. Respectfully, of course. The goblin truck pursuing after the survivors at the end is cool, but honestly, like you've said, Mike, I've checked out, and I'm just ready for this to be over with. And shout out to the Russians, I'm just kidding, for destroying the UFO, and thank goodness this movie is over. Great soundtrack as You Shook Me All Night Long plays in the credits roll. That's all I got.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
That's all I got. But I do got Instagram if y'all ready to jump into the social media comments and questions. That was a nice little transition. Pat on my back for that one. Just kidding. All right, I only got one comment again, just like we did for Primal Fear. I guess the IGs ain't feeling these reviews this week, but we'll bounce back. You will bounce back. Some good coach talk. Review the film. Missy Hutchinson Wall commented, my favorite was the lady killed by her hairdryer with the ghost face emoji. Okay. Brian, you got the old Book of Faces?
Book of Faces, Meg Stone. This movie is wild. I remember watching on TV as a kid some Saturday. It is ridiculous and wonderful. And this really is Dustin's burner account, Dex Cole. Bro, I love this movie. When I was a kid, this lawnmower freaked me out. A memory I always have from it was my dad never called it by its name, and it was always Trucks when it came on. And so he would say it all loud, Trucks! Oh, good time, guys. And Matt Sears, great soundtrack.
All right. I got the artist formerly known as Twitter. X, Andrew Ferguson said, I love everything about this. 80s cheese, Trucks, Mid-Atlantic backdrop, the AC/DC soundtrack. And this movie was Yardley Smith's and Pat Hingle's career-defining roles, not Lisa Simpson or Commissioner Gordon. Hell yeah, I agree. Randy Smith, Go Dog, said, I fucking love this movie. Was almost my pick back in January. It's such an amazing cocaine-filled party that I know that at least Dustin will appreciate. The AC/DC soundtrack is top-notch. Hell yeah, you're right about that. So, fun fact about the soundtrack, though, it was originally, at the time of the release, many music stores had no idea the album Who Made Who was a compilation soundtrack for this movie. They mislabeled it as an AC/DC Greatest Hits. So I thought that was funny. Limited pressings of the vinyl did feature the movie's logo, stating it was the soundtrack, but it was removed from future pressings. So that was kind of interesting.
All right. Part of me wants to see if I can find one of those that doesn't cost an arm and a leg. I'll report back.
Y'all got any fun facts you want to share?
Stephen King originally wanted to cast Bruce Springsteen in the lead. Fucking Stephen King. Come on, man. What the hell?
Born in the USA.
Gary Busey was interested in starring in this film. Of course he was. Cocaine was involved. Come the fuck on. Like, this is Gary Busey we're talking about here. In the film, the Earth passes through the comet's tail on June 19th, 1987. On June 19th, 1999, King was hit and nearly killed by a truck driver. That was crazy as hell. After a year, this was more fun. Fun fact towards me. I found it interesting. So maybe some of you guys will too. But a year after the movie was released, the Green Goblin truck was taken to Silent Rick's Towing and Salvage in Wilmington, North Carolina. The jaw, lower teeth, tongue, and tops of the ears were gone, and what was left was severely burned. John Allison of Wilmington, North Carolina, saw it there and bought it. He sold it to Tim Shockey of Piketon, Ohio on February 19, 1987. Tim displayed it in his video store, Uncle Jim's Videoland in Waverly, Ohio, for several years until he sold the business. That's fucking awesome. The truck sat in his backyard for almost 20 years. Can you just imagine having that in your backyard? And in 2011, he moved it into his garage and started restoring it. He spent 2 years restoring the head. He now travels across the USA and Canada, taking it to horror and comic cons. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Awesome. That's really right. Cool.
This one I didn't have originally, but I think it's worth saying. So after shooting up the building, the M60, the military vehicle, makes a small growl, hinting that it may be an invisible alien. What? Okay. Stephen King, like you said, Brian, he admitted that he was coked out of his mind during production. He didn't know what he was doing, but he did also remark that he'd like to try directing sober one day. Hell yeah. The Dixie Boy truck stop was a set that was constructed 10 miles outside of Wilmington, North Carolina. It was convincing enough that several truckers tried to stop in. Eventually, the producers put announcements in local papers saying that it was just a movie set. While shooting the scene in which the steamroller rampages across the baseball diamond, Stephen King asked the special effects department to place a bag of fake blood near the dummy of the young player, and a smear of blood would appear on the steamroller and be resmeared on the grass over and over like a printing press. While filming the scene, the bag of blood exploded too soon, and it sprayed everywhere, making it appear as if the boy's head had also exploded. King was thrilled with the results, but censors demanded the shot be cut. Dude, that's that cocaine talking, man. You do something on cocaine, you're like, hell yeah, that's awesome. Fuck yeah, let's do it. So I wish they'd have left that in. That would have been hilarious. On June 31st, 1985, while shooting in a suburb of Wilmington, North Carolina, a radio-controlled lawnmower went out of control and struck a block of wood used as a camera support, shooting out wood splinters. Director of photography Armando Nannuzzi lost his right eye. Nannuzzi sued Stephen King on February 18, 1987 for $18 million in damages. The suit was settled out of court. Holy shit. A few more here. The trailer for this film used a John Carpenter, Alan Howarth score from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Okay. Yardley Smith has some fucking nerve. She is very embarrassed by this film. Which is funny, though, also because in season 10 of The Simpsons, there's an episode called Maximum Homer Drive, where Homer Simpson is a truck driver. Stephen King later called this film a moron movie. I guess I'm a moron then because I had fun with it. And then the last one I've got, Pat Hingle, who played Hendershot, was also in Talladega Nights with John C. Reilly, who was in The Lobster with Colin Farrell, who was in Seven Psychopaths with Sam Rockwell, who was in Laggies with Jasmine Savoy Brown, who was in the Scream reboot 2022 with David fucking Arquette. Let's go.
That was a good one. That was a really fucking good one. Also, poll, is Lobster horror enough for us to review?
Ooh, it's, I fucking love that movie. It's so weird.
Me too. I'm picking it. I'm picking it if it's horror enough. I feel like it is.
August is A24 month, brother.
Yeah, but I'm already getting on Maxine, brother. That's I'll find another time to do.
I love Colin Farrell, so the only Colin Farrell movie that I will flat out say hell no to is The Killing of a Sacred Deer. The rest of them, hell yeah, let's do it.
Sounds good. This movie was made for a whopping $9 million and made $7.4 million in gross. That is gross, is what I will say that is. That is
so gross. They didn't even make back the cocaine budget. That's incredible.
No, they didn't. And also, hey, that's more than Tony. Hey, that's less than Tony Khan spends in a month, too, buddy. That's also Stephen King calling this movie a moron movie, brother. He wrote the fucking characters, moron. Jesus. Anyway, go ahead,
moron. All right, guys, jump to our favorite kill, least favorite kill, and the rating. I'll just go ahead and go first. Favorite kill, I got a tie. It's between the kid run over by the steamroller and the coach mollywop by soda cans. Hell yeah, I had good times with both of them. Coach didn't deserve it. The kid did because he had zero will to live. Worst kill, Hendershot. The guy was a huge dick and deserved a way worse death than he got. It's kind of like Burke in Aliens. Burke got away with it. He should have got way worse. I think if you've listened to this review, I kind of made myself clear. I'm not the biggest fan of this one. Outside of a few funny moments, I don't really enjoy watching it. I do enjoy the soundtrack. I'm going to give this movie 0.5 higher than Cloverfield, and I'm going to give it a 3.
Hell yeah. Let me go ahead and knock mine out then. When you said I'm going to give this movie 0.5 higher, I didn't know the word higher was coming next. I thought you were about to say you were going to give it a 0.5, and I was about to come through the screen. But favorite kill, got to be the Little League coach. He took a soda can to the dick and then a few more. And that machine was hurling cans at a speed that makes Randy Johnson's fastball look like soft toss. I loved it. Lee's favorite kill, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess Hendershot. I just put any of the people who died by gunfire from the military vehicle because they all, it's like, what are we doing here? Rating, final thoughts. Look, it's so bad it's kind of good, man. I had a ton of fun watching this movie some 25 years after I last saw it. It's very clear Stephen King was coked up while directing. It makes even the worst idea seem good. I know he was directing this like, fuck yeah, this is cinema. And then with every absurd thing that happened, he was slapping high fives and saying how awesome it was, remarking it out loud. I get it. It's by no means cinema, but I enjoy this movie, and the runtime is excellent for a bad movie, so I gave it a 6.
All right. My favorite kill is actually the same here as Nico, and it is the baseball can kill, you know, the coach. Also, just hilarious, fucking hilarious. And look, I normally when I see someone getting hit in the boys on screen, I kind of don't love that, but it was too fucking funny. The whole thing was great. My least favorite kill is any of the gun kills because there's actually some really cool creative kills in the movie. I mean, it's a movie about trucks that are invaded by aliens. Like there's room for great kills. Look, you know, and like you mentioned, Dustin, that's a binged out Stephen King writing these kills. So that's awesome. Anyway. I've kind of made my thoughts known, so I won't hold you too much longer, but not for me. Some funny parts, enjoyable, I guess. I mean, I like this more than like a Thanksgiving, but you're also taking it from someone that rated Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey a fucking 7. So what the fuck does my opinion really mean anyway? So with that being said, I gave this movie 0.5 less than Halloween Ends, 4.5.
Jesus Christ. All right. My favorite kill, Steamrolled Kid, for sure. Loved it. Least favorite kill, probably Deke's dad. What was his name? Duncan? What a dumbass. Best soundtrack to any movie of all time, right there with Lost Boys, Ghostbusters 2 for me.
Batman,
I'm at horror movies, but okay. Absolutely.
Interstellar. This one,
it's not even a horror movie, man. What's wrong with you? God damn. This one may just go ahead and take the cake. So that is going to, of course, up this score by an insane amount of points. And like I said in my open, I love the 80s-ness, new word, trademark, copyright, trademark, of this movie. Like, it was fun as shit. It had it not had that lull in the middle, it would be super damn high. And listen, there are some movies like Gremlins or some other movies like I've mentioned where if you didn't grow up in the 80s, you can still watch and go, yeah, I can see how that's become a cult classic. This is one of those movies, in my opinion, that has done that. And so, yeah, I'm going to give this one the same rating I gave Gremlins, highest on the show, Bubba, 7.5 from me.
Hell yeah. That takes our composite score to 5.25. IMDb has it at 5.4, so we're right there in line. But Rotten Tomatoes, the fuck are we doing? 14% certified rotten? Come on.
Why is that funny?
Yeah, it is funny. Hey, the number 34 seems to be very popular today. Anyway.
Well, it was just the way he said certified rotten. I don't know.
Goddamn right it is rotten.
Bro was ticked off.
I mean, I feel personally attacked. I'm offended.
I felt personally attacked by you picking this movie, but here we are.
I'll fucking do it again.
Yeah, you will, asshole.
All right, guys. I got any final thoughts? We just shout out our blood donors.
Nope.
All right, cool. We really appreciate our blood donors. I really do take a big burden off of us. Let's give y'all a shout out. Anita Russell, final girl donor, Primal Fear. That's our next review. Really excited to review that one. Camper Level Reoccurring, Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Elgson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast, Dana Tucker, and Cole McAlexander. We really appreciate y'all. Y'all really do help us out a lot, and it does mean a lot to us. We tweeted the other day, posted whatever the fuck you do on X now. We're going to do a giveaway once we hit 800 followers. We did. We didn't forget. We're brainstorming. We're going to figure out something, and then we will do that giveaway. Guys, any final thoughts on Maximum Overdrive? Anyway, we appreciate y'all listening, and check us out on X for that giveaway if you want any free shit. If not, fuck off and don't do it. All right, appreciate it. Just want to remind everybody. Don't go out there.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.